Welcome to Tension, the Film Noir of the Week podcast at filmnoiroftheweek.com. I'm Steve Eifert. Today we watch the brilliant Fritz Lang thriller from 1945, Scarlet Street. Edward G. Robinson is a broken man. He enters a seedy, dark city motel room. The neon sign blinks on and off just outside his window. Robinson is haunted by guilt, whistling and voices echo in his head. It's finally too much. He tries to hang himself, only to fail again when rescued. That's one of many fantastically dark scenes from the film. Scarlet Street is about a common bank cashier in the 1930s who succumbs first to vice and then murder. The unofficial sequel to The Woman in the Window, it's a story that's filled with twists, turns, and double crosses. What I enjoy about the film is the common man, played by Edward G. Robinson, is as selfish as the prostitute and pimp, Kitty and Johnny, Joan Bennett and Dan Duryea. There isn't a good person in the whole story, even his boss, cheating on his wife. And his wife, the old battle axe, are evil to a degree. Most critics seem to think the film is a carbon copy of The Woman in the Window. I have to disagree. In that one, Robinson and Bennett are sophisticated and smart. Okay, Duryea is the same. In The Woman in the Window, Robinson is spending the evening with a beautiful girl on the lark, just so he can brag to his friends. In Scarlet Street, Robinson plays a man who married his wife because he was dying of loneliness. In the middle of Scarlet Street, he says, "I've never seen a naked woman," to his wife, giving us a pretty good hint you never even consummated his relationship. Cross is a dreamer. His two dreams stated in the film was to become a painter and to have a young girl fall in love with him. He gets both. But his idea of love and art are selfish. In the book, Dark City, the Film Noir, by Spencer Selby, Selby writes how two of the characters view art and how their views help define them. Quote, "The idea of wishful dreams around which Scarlet Street is built becomes strongly linked with the idea of art. Cross's standing as Johnny and Kitty's key to riches is totally dependent on his identity as an artist. To Johnny, great art is a dream come true, solely because it's worth a lot of money. With Cross, the association of art, wishful dreams, and glamorous love was first established in the early dialogue with the friend. The link is extended and further clarified when he compares his love for Kitty to his love for art. Though more genuinely aesthetic than Johnny's, the association is really just as selfish and subjective. For both characters, art represents a dreamlike escape from the problems and frustrations that plague mundane existence. Johnny's dream takes a beating when he pierces the illusion of Cross's artistic fame by selling two of his paintings. However, in doing this, he sets the stage for real success and a new illusion. As the works of Catherine March, Cross's paintings become instantly popular and valuable. Johnny engineers this deception solely for his own profit, but thematically, his action further reinforces the important link between art and illusion." Unquote. Art for Johnny means money, and for Chris, romantic love. Both these things will eventually destroy both of their lives. Watching the movie again, I was taken by the three performances. Robinson plays the sap great. He's not as innocent as I first thought. True, he's run through the ringer, but at the end he kills a woman and lies to send a man to the electric chair. First, I thought he was haunted by guilt after their deaths. He's not. He's haunted by the fact that he was made a fool of by Kitty and Johnny. Sitting in his room alone at the end, he hears Kitty and Johnny's voice taunting him. They're telling him now they can be together in their deaths, all thanks to him. Robinson's performance is more physical than verbal. When he knocks Johnny to the ground with an umbrella in a silent attack, he throws his arms in front of his face trying to block a blow that never comes. Much later, before he kills Ice Princess Kitty with a pick, appropriate, he walks into the room all hunched over, looking much older than when he was walking in the clouds in love. And how about when he's forced to do the dishes wearing that flowery apron? Classic. Bennett in the film is the ultimate vamp. In the new print, you can see her facial expressions change to really tell what she's thinking. Hint, it's usually not what's coming out of her mouth. Sure, Chris must be blind not to see he's being taken, but Kitty plays the role well. I love her apartment, with the dishes piling up in the sink and her spitting grape seeds around the place. She's a lazy slob with some great legs. Bennett plays the part just right. She likes Johnny even though he slaps her around. In fact, that's why she likes him. She states that if Chris wasn't so nice to her, she'd like him better. Kitty will do anything for Johnny, and that's what gets her killed. Dorier is the big bad wolf. Boy, is he good in this. The first time I saw this film, about 20 years ago, late night on A&E, I remember flipping through books trying to find out who this guy was. He plays Johnny just right. His clothes even match his attitude. Everyone knows someone like him. Johnny's always involved in schemes and trying to make it big without really trying, and blaming everyone else for his failures. Remember when Chris walks in and sees the two together in bed? What does Johnny do? He blames Kitty. In fact, every time something goes wrong, he blames her. Can you imagine any other actor pulling off this role? Of course, the film isn't just about performances. Lang and his crew put together a stunning-looking film. There are a number of scenes showcasing the film's lighting and camera work. Milton Krasner is the director of photography. When Kitty is killed in the white bedroom by Chris, and Chris being haunted by voices in the seedy hotel room, are just two excellent scenes. The script is filled with great dialogue and quotable noir lines. Fritz Lang may be remembered for Metropolis, but for me, his gift to film lovers is Scarlet Street.
Oh, I'm sorry I can't ask you to come up, but I share my apartment with another girl, Millie. Good night, and thanks for everything.
Don't you want a cup of coffee?
All right.
Hello, Kitty.
Hello, Tiny. Oh, this is Mr.
Cross. Glad to know you, Mr. Cross.
Oh, how do you do?
You seen Johnny?
No, not since he left here.
Two coffees, please.
Oh, I think I'll change my mind. I could stand a drink. A rum Collins.
One rum Collins?
Yes.
Oh, come on. Keep me company.
Well, you see, I've already had a good deal of champagne.
You want champagne?
Oh, no. Make mine the same. Ever since I first saw you, I was wondering what your name was.
Kitty.
It's really... Catherine. Catherine March. My friends call me Kitty. What do your friends call you?
Chris.
Chris. Cross. Crisscross.
Yes, the boy teased me about it, but I don't mind.
Why are you looking at me? Is my face dirty?
It's beautiful.
I'll bet it is. Oh, gee, I'm a sight.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Cheers, Chris.
Miss March.
Kitty.
Yes, Miss... Kitty. Well, look, Kitty. Since I'm old enough to be your father...
You're not so old.
You don't think so?
Well, you're not a boy. You're just, mature. I like mature people.
Well, what I wanted to say was, you shouldn't be alone in the street so late at night.
I was coming home from work.
You work this late?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Guess.
You're an actress.
Oh, you are clever. Now that you know all about me, tell me about yourself. What do you do?
Well, you see...
No, don't tell me. You work in a bank?
No.
Well, let's see. Greenwich Village is full of artists. I meet you in Greenwich Village. You must be an artist, right?
Well, I paint.
Of course, you're a painter. I love paintings. To think I took you for a cashier.
Thanks for listening. Download Tension, the Film Noir of the Week podcast, at all podcast locations. Also visit us at filmnoirtheweek.com or our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. I'm Steve Ivory.